Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Cats and dogs, children and babies. I am Michael, Jamal, Aziz, Shabazz, you know the joke, Brooks, although the Jamal part is no joke, with my illustrious co-host, one of my best friends, and the birthday boy, Waz. Big Waz.
What's up, man? Thank you for the birthday wishes, man. Even on my birthday, we working on the Woke Bros, man. That's how woke we are. We don't even sleep on our birthdays, man.
I mean, I was going to say, people should never give us any trouble about a week off when
right.
we're bringing this to you on a birthday. Of course, the illustrious, the junior evil genius in training, Rob Lopez, is steering the ship. We've got a packed show for you this week. But first, let's do a little bit of get some info out of the way. Get to me in a second. Waz, what do the people need to know?
Oh, about the live show in Boston?
I'm assuming there's live show in Boston, anything. Probably this, that's what they need to know about,
that's
right?
That's really what's the pressing issue right now. Because, again, yeah. we're about 3 weeks out. You know, a little bit more than 3 weeks. March 2nd at the Middle East in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Of course, you know, the whole Count the Dings crew will be there. Of course, as always, we will have a shit ton of special guests that you guys would like, surprise guesses, giveaways, all that good stuff. You know, as we get closer to the date, you know how everybody is, especially our listeners, procrastinators. We'll be buying up those tickets the closer we get to the date. You don't want to miss out, so please go get your tickets as soon as you can, because I don't want to hear, yo, man, I try to finally got my shit right. I wanted to get the tickets. It don't matter. You had since damn near February of last year.
Wow.
To buy these tickets. Nah, I'm lying. Wow. It was like November, December, but still.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you might be stretching a little bit. Very disciplined, orderly response from Waz. Get your Boston ticket stat. See Waz in his element, the mecca of white America, yes. Boston, Massachusetts.
With my people, people.
All right, so definitely get out there. Go to Boston. That's going to be, as all Count the Dings shows and all Count the Dings things, incredibly good. You don't want to miss it. And you will obviously want to see Waz and his just sort of black Israelite reaction to Boston. I want to just say, I mean, definitely some Count the Dings people came, some Woke Bros fans, but of course, first and foremost, TMBS fans. We ended up packing the Bell House. People were standing in the back. We had a great time. We had an amazing crew. Of course, unfortunately, we were missing Waz, and I really wish that Rob and Jade were there. They were on the list, but I understand it was like under 10 degrees outside. I'm actually—
Also, Jade lives in Boston, bro.
No, that's what I'm saying. No,
very close to Boston in Connecticut.
he lives in Connecticut. I know where he lives. He lives— I'm not going to get into geography, but yes, it would have been hard for Jade. Honestly, it was so cold, like Jade, that would be extreme for him to get there. But it would have been hard to get there just even from around Brooklyn because it was so damn cold. But, you know, a lot of people showed up. And I did also just want to say that because Jade was giving me some shit on the group text, like, why are we not on the list? So I'm like, of course you're on the list. Did I forget to mention that?
Typical
and I felt
Jade.
Like a jerk. but actually, we used the DJ Danarchy remix with you and Jade to intro the show. Trevor Bull, T from a great podcast, Champagne Sharks, Alona Minkowski, Boshkar Sumkara, the founder of Jackman Magazine. He wants to come and talk socialism and Knicks on Woke Bros, by the way. And
Mike Racine,
who's a really funny dude. He does another really funny pod called The Sit Down with Mike Racine. Alona came out. She danced to her DMX track that I picked as her intro music. I was very happy that that worked out. I thought it was going to happen. But yeah, look, everybody had a great time. Honestly, the energy was just amazing and people were happy and it was awesome to meet a lot of people. And it was cool because, you know, at this point, this was probably my fourth show in the Bell House. So it was cool to start basically taking TMBS on the road at the Bell House. Now, I don't have any specific things to announce yet, but when I say start, that's a pretty strong foreshadowing of an announcement that we're very excited. And I mean, the whole TMBS crew also was, and I are excited to bring to you next week. So, and for patrons of TMBS, patreon.com/TMBS, we're posting the whole live show for patrons if you didn't get a chance to come out and see it. So thanks to everybody. It was fucking great. Let's get to it. We got to start with an action-packed week. And our first piece of action is Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, who apparently – well, I mean, I guess he's changed his story. But it seems really obvious that he posed in, you know, just basically grotesque blackface in, I believe, 1984 as a medical student in the yearbook photo at Virginia Military College, I believe. He's standing next to another gentleman who's dressed up as a Klansman, and he has shifted his story around.
Dynamic duo.
Yeah, right. Dynamic duo. He turned in, but he also tried to pull a Shaggy in the last couple of days. Wasn't me. The only blackface I ever did was Michael Jackson. His wife had to kind of explain to him that he shouldn't try to do the moonwalk at his press conference. But let me just say this. The photo's disgusting. His response is totally insufficient, a failure. So I definitely think he needs to resign. But the only part of this conversation where – I mean, there's a lot to it. But the only part that I want to actually just ask you, Waz, because I'm not sure on this myself, because I am – you know, I say this all the time, and usually, you know, I'm talking about things that are, you know, frankly not that important. But this is important. This is actually a really serious and really fucked up thing for somebody who's going to hold public office. But I'm a strong critic of, you know, this puritanical, everybody has to go culture. I think ultimately it's crabs in a barrel and nobody is perfect. And everybody, you know, in one way, shape or form, this kind of like cult broad atmosphere of constant condemnation is not healthy for anybody. At the same time, the dialectic is it's great that we're discarding and improving and putting behind disgusting and unacceptable behaviors like what Ralph Northam did. If Ralph Northam was running for governor in 2016 or 2017, and he came out right even when he was announcing and said, and there's another thing besides my vision of Virginia, blah, 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 that I got to get out of the way. And that is that I posed in this disgusting, racist, unforgivable photo. It was another time, still absolutely wrong. I've, you know, learned X, Y, and Z. Not only have I learned, but in fact, you know, for what it's worth, he's a conservative right-wing Democrat, but he isn't a Republican. And I'm just going to say that is a qualitative difference. He might be able to point potentially, I don't know enough about him to be honest, but to substantive things in his record on things like civil rights. And if he had done that out front and gotten it out of the way, I'm more inclined in general now to say, hey, all right, whatever it is, to be honest, as long as, you know, it isn't a pattern and they've gotten out ahead of it. What do you think about that? Or no, he just has
to go. I mean, look, first and foremost, I'd like to say that I agree with everything that you just said. Obviously, this is terrible, right? This is a bad look. A guy who is holding public office and is ostensibly supposed to be a public servant, when you consider the black citizens of Virginia specifically, the idea that they might have a problem with this and that, like, he might not be the right person to serve under those people, you know, all of those things is self-evident. But, you know, as my man Chuck Pierce pointed out, he's like, the Dems, we don't need to be taking cues from the goddamn Republicans, right? Meaning, we don't need to take cues from the people who have harbored the likes of Steve King for decades and decades, right? Like the party of the Klan, the party of the alt-right. Like, they don't need to be part of the discussion. And, you know, prior examples of this are things like Shirley Sherrod, where Obama and them jumped out the window for some straight up bullshit. Like, there's no two ways about it. They let the Republicans bait them on matters of race. Like, you have no standing here as a party. Your party, the constituency that you serve, you guys have nothing to say about this stuff. Like, stay out of this. Yes, Northam did some repugnant, disgusting things. We can figure out how to deal with this dude without the peanut gallery. And then, you know, stuff like Acorn as well, where the Dems went out of the way to, you know, jump out the window because of what Republicans taking cues from them on matters of race relations is just ridiculous outright. Like, we don't need to listen to these fools, man. It's a farce. Again, this is the party that harbors Steve King, bro. The Steve, what's so bad about white supremacy? When did white supremacy become such a bad thing? That dude, that Steve King, you know. So I just hope the Dems don't do that. And I think, you know, we are getting better at that. Hold on one second. All right, yeah. So I think that we are getting better at that, you know, as the years progress. I think back in the days, man, they would have kowtowed to the freaking, they would have kowtowed to the Republicans so quickly. You know, we'll see what this guy decides to do, and we'll see what the citizens of Virginia want, right?
I think the way he's responded to it is what makes me say he has to go because of the changing stories and all the rest of it. But I think if he had come ahead of it, you know, I think there needs to be a lot more of that, to be honest. And I think that's, again, that's a paradox of how do you deal with, like, a culture and a politics where we're actually trying to be transparent and improving ourselves and owning all of our, you know, who we are and all of our humanity and mistakes, but then at the same time, you know, also not undermining the severity of a fuck up like this. So my thing is that, and that's where I just lay my stake. It's in the response. That being said, I also just want to put two other things real quick on the table. Virginia's attorney general, who's also a Democrat, has admitted this morning that he also appeared in blackface. And actually, I'll get to the second point in a second. I just want to say, like, this also to me really is very, like, this is the type of geographic conversation that just, like, and I'm in no way, like, we joke about Boston all the time. That doesn't happen to be the part of Massachusetts that I grew up in. I grew up in a very different flavor, but, like, you know, Boston is a notoriously racist city and also just racial, even in terms of, like, inter-ethnic white rivalries and hugely racist towards black people. So I am totally not of the school of, you know, of delusional, like, white, like, oh, man, look at the South. What the fuck? That being said, what the fuck? Because, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it reminds me of a conversation I had probably 5 years ago with a girl I was seeing at the time. And she was black, and we were, you know, we were having one of these race conversations. And again, I was highly willing to, you know, I was kind of joking, like, oh, you know, the area I was in would be like, you know, everybody wanted, you know, fucking, I can't even think what the right example would be, but, you know, like a very pro Obama area and a very, like, ooh, this and that kind of area, but definitely like, whoa, what the fuck is that black guy doing on the street? Let's call the cops, right? Like that kind of hypocrisy, yeah. Contradiction.
That's like your centrist liberal right there.
The centrist liberal. Exactly. Very heavy. Right. But I said to her, and I said, but I also said, you know, but to be honest, and this is true on the other token, like, no, people didn't say the N word when it was just white people around. Like, you didn't say that word. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure plenty of people did, but not in that particular ethos. And she grew up in the South, and she's like, yeah, oh, yeah, people still just say that to you today. So again, without going into some Northeast bullshit, I have to say, like, what the fuck?
I mean, look, I get it. And I know people from the South are tired of getting ragged on for racism as if, like, it's only their burden to carry. But the bottom line is, man, and Virginia's not Mississippi. But Mississippi ain't Boston, bro. Like, Boston ain't Mississippi. It's a lot more pronounced there. It just is. I'm sorry. Like, your grandfather remembers people who fought in the Civil War, okay? Like, your grandfather knew people who fought in the Civil War. You know what I'm saying? Like, on the other side. On the
Right, on the wrong side.
The treasonous side. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just the bottom line, you know? Like, that's just what it is. And again, like, this guy getting out front of it, like, yo, bro, I did the same shit when I was young. I was stupid. But, man, there's just better ways to do this, right? And I think getting out front is better. I think... And, you know, not to segue too quickly off of Northern, but did you see this Liam Neeson stuff?
Dude, I do not know. Like, I can't even. I mean, a little bit. I literally just saw headlines and I just was like.
Okay, the long story short is Liam Neeson was telling a story. And by the way, he's talking about progress that he's made in his life, essentially.
Right.
He, you know, way back, decades ago. Somebody very close to him was raped.
I'll tell you a story. This is true. I'm not going to use any names, but I was away and I came back and she told me she had been raped. But she handled the situation of the rape in the most extraordinary way. But my immediate reaction was, I asked, did she know who it was? No. What color were they? She said it was a black person. I went up and down areas with a cosh, hoping I'd be approached by somebody. I'm ashamed to say that. And I did it for maybe a week, hoping some black bastard would come out of a pub and have a go at me about something, you know, so that I could kill him. And it took me a week, maybe a week and a half to kind of go over that. And she said to me, where are you going? I said, I'm just going out for a walk, you know. She said, what's wrong? No, nothing's wrong, fine. And it was horrible when I think back, but I did that. And I've never admitted that to it. I'm saying it to a journalist, God forbid.
Holy shit.
It's awful. But I did learn a lesson from it when I eventually thought, what the fuck are you doing, you know? And I come from a society, I grew up in Northern Ireland in the Troubles, and I knew a couple of guys that died in hunger strike, and I had acquaintances that were very caught up in the Troubles. And I understand that need for revenge, but it just leads to more revenge and more killing and more killing. And, you know, Northern Ireland is proof of that, you know. All the stuff that's happening in the world at the minute, the violence is proof of that, you know. So it's but that, yeah, primal need. I understand. You
can
know?
Relate to that.
Like, essentially, he wanted to commit a revenge murder, not against the person who actually perpetrated the crime, but just any black criminal, like any black person at all would have done just fine for him. But and people jumped down his throat. And, you know, some of it is justifiable. Like, that's a very vile thing. And I think Liam Neeson was like, this is something I had to overcome. I had to get better than that. Like, I had to move past my biases and ignorance and all of that. And his follow-up interview on Good Morning America didn't really do him any favors.
You're admitting that it was wrong. You've learned from that. But you have to also understand the pain of a black person hearing what you said.
Absolutely. That. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And at the time, even though it was nearly 40 years ago, I didn't think about that. Mm. All those things surprised me. But it was this primal hatred, I guess, that really, really shocked me when I eventually came down to earth. Yeah. And saw what I was doing, going out looking for a fight.
But I think this is the problem with the discourse. I think somebody like Liam Neeson needs the space to actually admit something like that, right? Because I think he's speaking for a lot of non-black people when they're like, when I think of black people, I think of criminals, right? It doesn't matter that... you know, empirical evidence suggests otherwise, that most black people are just, you know, just fine being law-abiding citizens. But, like, you know, it's just I have these biases and this is why, and I need to work to overcome them. I think these conversations need to happen, right? Not the we don't need to have the conversation of Liam Neeson was justified. Like, basically, he wanted to go out and lynch somebody, essentially. Right.
Well, that's I love that. I mean, yeah, I think that is the really like the way these conversations seem to happen. And granted, of course, and this is where we can just say like social media sucks and it brings out the worst in everybody. But it's like it immediately peels into. I mean, so one problem, which is the obvious problem that anybody like us is going to know, is the like, this was in the past, like, shut up, you know, like, be colorblind, right? Like, all of the various versions of either, like, the racism or sexism of pretending or trying to assert that those things don't exist, all the way out through, you know, the new, more overt forms of, like, as an example, we have a fucking white nationalist president. But then on the flip side, in these woke circles, it's and I'm to me, like, this is just like an objective comment, right? Like, I understand even like some of the like, well, you know, yeah, I get it. Like, it's on both ends, because first fucking Liam Neeson basically comes out and says that he was looking to lynch somebody as a young person, which is fucking horrifying and racist. And also, I have to say, like, I would imagine no surprise to somebody who's grown up black in the Western world. And then on the other hand, right, like the bottom line is, though, is that in order to get to an in place of improvement, there's going to need to be the space and the generosity for people to own mistakes and have that conversation. So what you see in
– yeah.
And so what you see, and it's funny because you see like the right wing and the dominant culture still is just trying to say like it isn't a problem, shut the fuck up, stop complaining, all of the usual tools of not dealing with racism as an example. But then in the woke circles, it's like, well, you made any mistake, so you're done, and we don't do that, and that's canceled, and yada, 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 and all right. of that really, really toxic, puritanical, like religious kind of fervor and bullshit. And then you have these people, you know, and that is where like the joke of like, you know, like the Sacha Baron Cohen character, like that, you know, these, you know, very silly kind of like performative white men, and then this kind of like really showing how woke they are. And so then what you don't have is you don't have the actual ground of how do we actually all get better? And that also means that there's enough literal space where, you know, people can own their shit. People can, you know, generally evolve, right? I mean, that's, you know, that is almost like when you think of something like a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. But if you have this environment of like, people need to be destroyed and da 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 da, that in and of itself is wrong and unhealthy. I don't know the answers to all of the specific ones. Like, I'll be honest, I saw the headlines of the Liam Neeson one and I was like, yeah, that looks pretty fucking bad.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and you know what, Mike, though? Yeah. You know what I think is lost in the conversation? I think the subtext of the Liam Neeson story is, as a young man, whether this be in the 80s, is like, okay, one, there's your very close friend being attacked by a black person. But again, the subtext is, when you turn on your news, when you turn on your TV, when you hear things, what's happening in places like Chicago and New York at those times, and who's being blamed for that? Who's the face of that, that poverty, that struggle, the type of shit that makes somebody go out and commit a crime, whether it be robbing somebody, raping somebody, the economic conditions that allow for that? Like, you know, this stuff, and the reason why I bring it up is because, Michael, this stuff works on black people. Right? Like, right. Like, we're engineered, like, we're engineered as American people to believe these things about black people, and it's so potent that it works on black people against other black people. So now just imagine somebody who's growing up in a culture of white supremacy where every day they're taught the message that you're white, you're good. all black people are bad.
Right.
You know, and again, like I said, like this shit works on black people. So people need to acknowledge that subtext too. And not to say that it gives Liam Neeson a blank slate and he gets to do what he wants. He's like, no, we can acknowledge the reality, right? Like this is something that needs to be worked on. It needs to be stamped out. And another thing that I'll say about our conversation about race, it's like both overrated and underrated at the same time.
Yes.
And I say, and I say like overrated in the sense like, bro, a person can be racist and not be completely crippled by it, right? Like, I need white people to know, like, yes, racism is a big deal, but you being a racist doesn't make you Lucifer reincarnated, right? Like, right. you're just a finished product of the racism factory of our system. Like, you're just a perfect product. You have no defects. Right. But the system was designed for you to get that way. And that's, again, not to make an excuse or whatever. It's just reality. Like, just because somebody's racist doesn't mean that, you know, they wouldn't help a granny across the street, or, you know, they'd want to hurt little kids, or they want to kill, maim animals and torture animals. No, like these things don't go hand in hand. Like, you can be a racist and be decent about 1,200 other human qualities, right, and human things. I think that's where we kind of overrate racism. It's like, yeah, Liam Neeson could have been a fucking complete dickhead when he was younger and still be somebody who's useful as an adult, you know, useful to society.
Yeah, I mean, I also just think, to be honest, like, to kind of follow up on that, and this is where I'll, you know, hit my Marxism pretty heavily, because I think you're right. Like, look, so many of these things are determined by larger forces, you know, our economic position, the fact that people are encultured into racism, you know, like all of this stuff. So that doesn't mean it lets the individual off. It doesn't mean that we don't have our own obligations to learn and improve. But it also means that, like, and again, this is another failing of that, of a certain kind of like liberal woke thing, is it really misaligns the priority. Like, it kind of goes from, well, we know there are these big macro structures that systemically abuse groups of people and inculcate all of this cultural toxicity. And now I'm going to land the bullseye of that problem on, you know, some micro behavior. And versus, you know, again, I'm not even saying you can address those, of course, but those are the small after effect and consequences of large systems that actually need to be dealt with. And, you know, on top of that too, like, I also just in general, to be honest, I'm much like, what, and this is a genuine question for me, like, what are the kind of like ranges here of what we need, right? So I'm always trying to like draw, like, even now when we talk about like white supremacy, I can totally accept, acknowledge, and agree with the fact that 100% of white people in this country are racist on some level, just by definition of how, of the atmosphere we came in the way you're talking about how black people are affected by the same narratives, 100%. Conversely, as like a practical politics of what that actually looks like, I'm going to shrink it to, if you support the border wall, right? Like, that's a tangible manifestation of, you want to do something with our money and our politics that is an overt act of white supremacy. That is more concrete. And I just think that, like, you know, some of these conversations, to be honest, really, to me, come on like the context you're in. Like, as far as I'm concerned, every single American needs to strongly support civil rights. They need to have a strong agenda about policing and about justice, and they need to be willing to work with a community of their peers, no matter what their racial or sexual identity, to achieve common ends. That's the bare minimum. That's what we got to work to get everybody on, right? And then other things, to be honest, it's like, I don't know, if you want to date inside your race, if you want to primarily be inside your own enclave, as long as that doesn't turn into hostility, I don't care. And I even think some of the conversations that people get very focused on are more alive, honestly, in, you know, social environments where people are dealing with much more like subtle forms of interaction. But in these other big picture ways, it's like, look, what are the legal mechanisms so everybody gets paid equally? And what are the social mechanisms so people can come together in unions and community and everything else? And what is the raw political power that needs to amass so that there's full civil rights? And then, you know, so I'm kind of like at the point too where it's like, you know, in some ways it's like I don't even care what's in people's hearts, you know, like by the same token, if I don't
I never have, right,
and by this, because by the same token, the last thing I'll say is like, you know, if someone like who I do not like and don't trust as a politician, like Joe Biden or, you know, or Cory Booker, you know what, if historical circumstances set up the context where they're the one, and I don't think this will be the case, which is why I won't support them, but if it changed and they were the ones to bring Medicare for all, awesome.
Oh my God. I'd flip-flop on them in a second.
Of course. And so people are – again, it's like getting out of this religious mode and getting into what are – like what is – like first of all, if you want to deal with people's personalities and beliefs and behavior and everything, then there needs to be a much more kind of sophisticated psychological approach to that. And then as far as politics goes, let's just get to the fucking politics.
Yeah, I you know, obviously I agree with all that. And you know, and I'm glad you brought up the primary, and whether it be people like Kamala Harris, who you and I did a nice little – people really love that Kamala Harris deep dive, by the way.
It's good.
We did a nice little deep dive on that. But it's – the bottom line is for her to win – the party is in such a place now that for her to win that nomination – she has to meet us at the table, right? Like, the lefties have a seat at the table these days. So the bottom line, in order for her to win, she has to cede some of our points, right? And we have the obligation to hold these people's feet to the fire and to go out and carry out these things. But does it, like, in the grand scheme of things, yes, it matters to those people and their families, like, who got locked up, who's, you know, the parents who got harassed by truancy cops and all of that shit. That shit matters. But, like, we still need that Medicare for all if she's our candidate, right? Yeah. And I think it's easy to hold – I don't think it's so hard to hold those two thoughts at the same time, if you will.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that that's actually the big thing in general that maybe I'm getting at, that people need to hold two thoughts at the same time much more broadly. And I think also save, you know, that real ammo for, you know, the Trumps of the world who actually really do need
the,
to
– the Mitch like McConnells. We need to find a way to get some brown and black folk into Kentucky, man. Figure that thing out. I don't know, man. Because Mitch McConnell is a scourge, bro. My Lord, bro.
He's a scumbag. He's
to the point where just like the sight of, I don't even want to read shit about him anymore. Like he really makes my blood boil, dude. Like even more so than the Cheeto in Chief at this point, bro. Like I like Mitch McConnell gets my gears grinded, bro. Hate
Mitch
that.
McConnell's the worst.
Like, no, but he really is, bro.
No, he's all of
God right people, now.
Of course, because on some level, it's not even. I'm not even trying. Like, Trump is the worst too, and I'm not. Like, I would never let him off the hook. But you know,
but his
Trump
level of competency is not in the same ballpark.
Yes, Mitch McConnell's the grave digger of this.
Paul Bearer.
Well, 21 Savage was arrested in Atlanta over the weekend. He was taken into custody, and they're saying that he could possibly be removed from the United States. Now, according to an ICE spokesperson, and this is all for immigration, they're saying that he entered the U.S. legally in 2005, but his visa expired, and reportedly he is here illegally. So he's being held for removal proceedings for being in the country illegally.
Take a dive. Put away my pride.
With my pride.
Shoot my shot. DM Jai slide.
Yeah, slide.
She in front, but she used to be my side.
Be my side.
We take selfies now. I used to end her life. But for the fame, plan B was robbing banks. Be a married man. Right now, I just can't.
I just can't.
All the love they gave me knew that it was fate. My mama loved me so much, either way I'm straight. I done seen so many handshakes turn to hate. Seen so many BFs turn SNAK. Death before dishonor tatted on my face. Where I run that checkup should've been with Chase. Started the bottom, the trenches, the gutter, so I had to go a little harder. Lights was off, the gas was off, so we had to boil up the water. Been through some things, but I couldn't imagine my kids stuck at the border. Flint still need water, people was innocent, couldn't get lawyers.
Man, yo, this stuff is all flowing seamlessly today. I can't front Rob Lopez. We did a good job producing the show. I wanted to move into this 21 situation with the ICE agents. He was in a car with a young, like, Atlanta up-and-coming artist, this guy named Nudie, who, by all indications, has a rap sheet, has a record in what we call the streets, right? Allegedly, he's committed a few crimes, you know what I'm saying? And the authorities over there in Atlanta have basically, they had a case built on this guy. They've been building a case on this guy for months now. 21 Savage, of course, is in a car with him. As is custom, when the police stop you and they're about to arrest somebody, they ran his name. They ran his ID and they found out that, yo, his stat, he's not a U.S. citizen. So the protocol now is to call the fucking ICE agents. As soon as you get your hands on an immigrant, essentially, you don't have your green card. And you don't have an American, basically, ID, they are calling the immigration officials on you. And the ICE is called on 21 and they take this guy into custody and he's still in custody. And again, this is a guy who pays a shit ton of taxes, employs a shit ton of people, is taking care of his family, is a millionaire. And because of the, you know, basically our policy aims under this regime, as far as immigration is concerned, this guy is still being detained. So, and then, again, this is a guy with means. He has a corporation like Sony Music, Epic Records behind him. He has millions of his own dollars. He's being detained. What do you think are happening to poor people from South and Central America, man? Like, what do we think they're doing to these type of folks? You know what I'm saying? People who don't have the social capital. I just think 1 to 21 shit is very sad and heartening. But man, yo, it really made me think of the folks who don't have all the shit that he has the access to. And what are they gonna do?
Yeah, I have no, I mean, 100%. I'm completely with you. And I think that, I mean, look, the bigger picture of this policy with Trump and the Republican Party, and we've said it, I mean, you're trying to ethnically cleanse the electorate because the fusion, I always say it, we should have some type of ding for this. The Republican Party's a marriage of oligarchy and white identity politics. And while I hate when Democrats do, you know, demographics are destiny. We don't really need to do anything because it's a multicultural country and Republicans are obviously such, you know, so bad that, you know, people of color will essentially have to vote for us no matter what we do. I hate that posture. I criticize Democrats for that. And at the same time, the Republicans are the white identity, white nationalist party. And so, you know, this is and this is also another good lesson too, why you absolutely do need to do things like abolish ICE. And I'm not saying no border. I hope people, you know, follow, but I'm saying demilitarize the border. That's a completely different question. And really have, and of course, give full, complete citizenship to people, you know, the over 10 million people living here right now, not just the dreamers, not just people with temporary protected status, but everybody. Just get the system clean, right, just, and safe for every single American, period. And I do say American. But, you know, because whether it be Trump or somebody else, I think people do have to realize that Republicans, they tried the, you know, business friendly version. George W. Bush and John McCain were both, you know, the kind of like, essentially, you know, corporations want guest workers. We need to have some type of, I mean, still really punitive, but a path to citizenship. And also, you know, they were thinking to themselves, you know, we don't want to completely alienate Hispanics. But what Trump did and where the Republican Party's at is it's, you know, it's like a brand. It's like McDonald's might look at some survey data that say that, you know, increasingly Americans are interested in eating healthier food and organic food and exercising and blah, blah, blah. So, okay, what do? We need to get healthier. But then they realize, like, at the end of the day, day in and day out, people are coming in here to buy Big Macs. And, you know, maybe we throw a salad on the menu that ends up having more calories than the Big Mac anyways. But we can't really transition to a healthy menu. The Republicans are a white nationalist party. They're not going to make that transition. At the end of the day, big business doesn't care because their bottom line is just tax giveaways and deregulation. So focus on Trump and the criminality and viciousness of this policy. I mean, 100%. If it's happening at 21 Savage, think of the children that have died as a result of this barbarism. But also realize that, you know, it's not good enough to just stop the most egregious things. You need to dismantle this whole infrastructure because, I mean, one, in and of itself, it's the right thing to do. And two, I think any Republican that gets in office is going to do stuff like this, even if they don't have the same overtly racist rhetoric as Trump.
Perfectly said, bro. And with that, man, that's this week's episode of the Woke Bros. Make sure y'all tune in next week for the special announcement, man. I will say, if you are on what we call the left coast, you will be happy about this news. Of course, make sure you get your tickets to Count the Dings live at the Middle East in Cambridge, Massachusetts. That's March the 2nd. We're going to be live and direct. I plan on acting an ass, so you don't want to miss that. Of course, shouts to Jade Hoy, you know, the evil producer. Shouts to the entire Count the Dings crew. We're in the midst of putting together something real beautiful and special, man. That's some other news that's being wrapped up, gift wrapped and bowed up as we speak. I can't wait till we get a chance to announce that. And of course, man, Rob Lopez, man, you doing your thing out here, Brody. We was able to put this episode together. We actually recorded hours earlier than we normally do because of schedule constraints. But I think we knocked it out the park anyway. So I want to thank Rob for all of that, the organization. And of course, thanks to the TMBS community, the Count the Dings community, the cross-pollinated community of both. I just want to thank all you guys for the support and the love on my birthday, man. It's amazing how many people have reached out from both communities to send love my way. I appreciate all that shit. We will see you guys next week. We out.